Hello, and welcome to another episode of Camino Talks. I'm Sean from Follow the Camino, and I'm joined today by Kenneth Strange, a California-based private investigator, ex-FBI agent, published author, and Camino pilgrim. Welcome, Kenneth.
Thank you for having me, Sean. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. So for our audience, perhaps you could give me a quick rundown on who Kenneth Strange is, your background, and who you are.
Certainly. So I'm a former law enforcement officer, a federal law enforcement officer with a 21-year career, a few years with the FBI. I'm currently a private investigator for the state of California. And as you know, I'm also a fairly recent author, although I've been writing pretty much all my life.
Great. Well, as I said, thank you for joining us. So first of all, for you, what is the Camino and what did you know about it before you walked the Camino?
Well, you know, it's a, what we can see is it is a social, a cultural, a historic phenomena, which has been with us for more than a thousand years. You know, it's a religious site, which has attracted pilgrims from all over the world. And I mean, you know, if you look at, and I'll just give you a statistic here, starting off, I was a student in Madrid, Spain in 1975. And in that year, they recorded 74 pilgrims who had made the journey, had finished and signed in Santiago. When my wife and I did it in 2018, we were one of 327,000 people. So, you know, you can see the significance that this has.
Yes.
And so, you know, certainly we wanted to do this for so many reasons. You know, it was religious, it attracted us from a religious point of view. My wife and I are both Catholics, so we wanted to do that. And you know, it's kind of the trifecta of pilgrimages. And we had already been to Rome, had been to Jerusalem, but we hadn't been to Santiago. So this would be the trifecta for us, among so many other reasons to do it, Sean.
Okay, great. And for Europeans, the Camino is quite well known at this stage. But in terms of North America and the US in particular, is it such a kind of well-known route, or are people aware of it?
I would say this, if you would stop an American in the street and ask them about the Camino to Santiago de Compostela, they probably would not know. I think it's more a niche type thing. Certainly there might be more awareness within within a Protestant or a Catholic church. Certainly people might know more about it. And then if you would drill down even further to maybe the hiking communities, they certainly, if you ask someone in a hiking club, they certainly know. Yes. About the Camino. I mean, it's very, very popular.
Okay. So what we hear talking to people is most or many people, their first kind of knowledge about the Camino is Martin Sheen's film, The Way. So you actually have had contact with Martin on a number of occasions. Perhaps you might kind of explain your relationship or how you know him.
Well, Martin, just a wonderful man. I mean, he's truly a generous soul, a kind soul. And, you know, not only does he talk the talk about Christianity, but he walks the walk. You know, we first met Martin. Of course, we had seen the movie, the iconic movie, his movie, The Way, right?
Yes.
Which was made in 2012, and it puts the Camino on the map for many people. So we certainly knew about him. And anyway, there's a side story about Martin Sheen, but suffice it to say that we really got to know him and really met him. Down in Mexico, we were doing some volunteer work.
Yes.
At a very impoverished parish church in Tijuana, Mexico. And, you know, when we got down to San Diego to meet with our group, you know, one of our colleagues said, why don't you introduce yourself to Martin? And I said, Martin who? And he points over to the McDonald's and he says, right there, Martin Sheen. And I said, oh, okay, sure. So, you know, that's, we met him, a wonderful man, and, you know, kind and very motivational. We told him, you know, we had seen the movie. We were also interested in doing the Camino, and was he encouraging? I mean, he, you know, he told us a lot of the backstory of the film, relationship with his son Emilio, the director, and really, really pushed us. I think that was the final push for us to do the final push. Yeah.
Okay, and we'll come back to another kind of time you kind of met with Martin later on in this interview.
Sure.
So before, as you were about to depart on your journey on the Camino, what were your expectations, and then were they actually met, or were they wildly kind of wrong?
Well, you know, that's an excellent question, Sean, and I'll be frank with you. We didn't really have any expectations. You know, we approached it with the attitude that we would just kind of let it come at us. I think I made that clear in my book, It's Your Camino, and which I just happen to have next to me.
Indeed.
Okay. And the reason is I mentioned it, I think it was in the last paragraph of the book, and I said, you know, if we learned anything, it was the Camino, like life, is a personal journey. It's a journey which helps the traveler reflect upon the other world, breathe in the air, and wait in joyous expectation for what might be around the corner. It all seemed so simple. So, you know, really no expectations going in, again, this, what was around the corner, and there was so many things around the corner, so many blessings that were coming our way, we just didn't know it. So we just took it in stride.
Okay. And did you do it the hard way, the easy way, hostels, backpacking, hotels? What was the journey
hybrid,
actually like?
Hybrid.
Hybrid.
Yeah, well, you know, we started off, you know, we're certainly a game. We've got spirit, right? So we tried, and again, you know, we were in our 60s, early 60s. So, you know, we're not spring chickens, and we did make the attempt and actually did survive a few evenings in the dormitories along the way. But again, it was kind of, in the dormitories, it was a different age group, a different, you know, so after about three or four nights of that, and some incidents along the way, we decided we'll go to a more private lodging, and you know, maybe a room with a shared bath, something like that. More, a little more privacy for, you know, people that are in their 60s. So, but we tried our best. We gave it a shot.
Yeah, and the type of people you met on the journey, particularly the first stage of the journey, which I understand you went from Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port in France over the border, across the mountains into Spain.
Yes.
What type of people did you meet?
You know, all kinds of people. I mean, you know, you have to remember, these are, you know, you're meeting hundreds of people a day. They're from all over the world. They're from various religions. We met a Muslim fella, and he was joking. Omar was joking. He said, you know, I haven't even done my first pilgrimage to Mecca, and I'm doing this. So, you know, there were people from Africa and from all over the world. So all ages, with all kinds of situations, people with diverse goals, reasons for being out there. And there were myriad reasons for people taking this journey. So, it was just a phenomenal number of people, and interesting, very interesting people. We learned a great deal.
Okay. And the question that we hear a lot is, oh, I'm not sure if I'm fit enough, or I'm possibly too old, or I'm not healthy. What is your view on that? Is it a journey for everybody, or is it certain types of people can't do it?
That's nonsense, Sean. It's a journey for everybody. You don't have to do the 500 miles. There's always the last 60 miles where you can actually, if you do the last 60 miles by foot, on foot, you know, as you know, you receive your credential, you get a Compostela. And the last 60 miles is a wonderful section. It's beautiful. That there are slight challenges just to make it difficult, just enough, but not too much, not overly. So, you know, if you can break that up into like 4, 5, 6 days for the last 6 miles, I think anybody can do it, provided that, you know, you're attired properly and, you know, maybe you've trained a little bit, you've taken a few small little hikes. If you don't overdo it, just take your time. And that, you know, again, I want to go back to my book. It's Your Camino. The reason of the book is telling people it's your Camino. It's what you make of it. It's what you expect to get out of it. You can walk, you can take a bus a little bit, a taxi a little bit. You can go by horseback. We saw a few people on horseback. It's really your Camino. You can speed walk it or take a year on the Camino. As this English woman said to me, Ken, it's your Camino. So, you know, that stuck with me.
Yes. So you finished the Camino, you went back home, and most people that have been away traveling or on holidays, they kind of fall back into their life, back to work or whatever they do. But you decided to write a book. What was the reason? Was it to capture your memories? Was it to persuade other people to go on the Camino? Why did you write a book?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I thought the book wrote itself. And what I did is every day I put together some thoughts, maybe took a photo that may kind of reflect that day, and I put it out on social media, on Facebook, mostly on Facebook. So, after about 31 days of this, that which was the length of our trip, I now had like 31 little mini stories to tell. And I took some notes. So when I came back and I looked at these notes and at the Facebook, I said, that is really the skeleton for the book. And it was such an inspirational journey for us that I thought, look, I've got this here. I'm halfway there, or so I thought. And I said, this really needs to be written. It's something that I would like our children to have and look back on, and maybe they'll do it someday, or their grandkids. So it was kind of a little bit of a legacy thing, but I also wanted to kind of put it out there for other Americans, maybe other hikers that would say, hey, this is interesting. I think I'd like to do this. So, yeah, that's what happened.
As you were going through the process of writing the book, you called upon your celebrity editor as well to help out. So how did that happen?
Oh, yeah, that's a funny story. So, at one point we attended the same church.
Okay? As Martin.
Yeah. With Martin Sheehan. And we were very excited to tell him what we had just accomplished. And after church, outside church, on the steps of the at the church, we saw him. And he was so excited that we had done it. I said, Martin, look what you've started. I wrote a book. I have a manuscript. And he was he was amazed. And he said, well, that's grand. And I said, look, would it be too much to ask for you to look it over? And he really surprised me. He said, I'd be delighted to do that. So I thought, okay, well, you know, he's very busy. At the time, he was doing the TV series Frankie and Johnny. So we knew he was busy, and I thought, oh, well, you know, he means well, but he's surely he's not going to have the time to do it. And then, like, within a week, I get a call from an unknown number on my phone, and I'm at the gym and a little bit out of breath, and it's Martin Sheen's voice, you know, and he says, you know, hey, I love this. It's special. This is a special book. And he says, I have a few ideas. Okay. I'm open to those ideas. So that's how it went. And then he then said, is there anything I could do to help you? And I said, oh, absolutely. You know, maybe a cover quote, if that's not asking too much. And he goes, oh, no problems. And again, I thought, yeah, sure, you know, that's, but, you know, a week later, a letter comes in, Martin Sheen, beautiful handwriting. And he says, Ken, here's a number of cover quotes. Feel free to use any one of them or a combination thereof. So just a wonderful man, very giving. I can't say enough about him. Good person.
So it's one thing writing a book, but then you have to sell it. So I know it's been out about a year now. So how have you promoted it? What is that like?
You know, this is a kind of joke with my wife. The Camino is a gift that keeps on giving. And so we've been basically talking to people at Rotary Club meetings. That seems to be a very popular venue to discuss books and to kind of move your book through the system. Of course, there have been some book signings as well. And now, mind you, all of this has come to a dramatic halt with COVID, right? And we were kind of on the precipice of, like, I had a book signing at Barnes & Noble that was scheduled. I had some other, podcasts, things like that. So, that's all come to a halt. But thank goodness for Zoom, right? You have to adapt.
Yes.
So, anything to do with church conferences, I'll be out at meetings like that. I might stop in at an indie book bookshop, talk to the owner, you know, a few copies, kind of spread the word, and some podcasts. The History Hour, I was on the History Hour of History with Stephen Bauman, another fella with the hiking background. Yes. Podcast. So kind of reaching out to all these different people. So it's been fun. It's been enjoyable, and I never get tired of talking about our experience.
And do you have any kind of tips for kind of budding authors? Because I know a lot of people do actually write about their experience on the Camino. They come from different angles. Is there anything you've kind of found that you could maybe kind of advise other people?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And, again, this was my first rodeo. So I fortuitously kind of found two blogsters here in the States, Ann Allen from California and Ruth Harris from New York City. And they are writers and blogsters. And they really focus, their appeal is to the new writer. So they kind of steer you away from all these shoals of, kind of fraudulent stuff that's out there nibbling away at the edges. And they can help you fine tune what you've done. And, they're always pointing you to, here's how you get a literary agent. Here's how you write. Here are words that you should delete from your manuscript, things of that nature. So their blogs have been very, very helpful. And then I joined I think it's called Critique Corner. And so you kind of sign up with this group, and they are other authors of all levels, and they will look at your manuscript and they will critique it for you. And, once you get over that kind of defensiveness, like, I don't want to be criticized, or, and it develops kind of a thick skin. And these authors in this particular group were so helpful to me. In fact, one of them had done the Camino, so he was very interested, and he had become a screenwriter here in Los Angeles. And he said, let me give you a tip. And, you know, he shared this tip with me, and it really made the difference in the book. So I would say Critiques Corner, blogs, you know, just to stay current on the internet. There's a lot out there on social media. Jane Friedman is another person that people can look at. You know, she kind of takes people through the world of publishing or self-publishing.
Yeah. So with all this advice and experience, you decided to get back on the horse and write another book. So maybe you can talk about that.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's been on my mind since I retired from law enforcement about 10, 11 years ago. So, and really the genesis of that is, you know, people would ask me, you know, about my career, you know, hey, do you do anything interesting? Well, maybe one, I have, you know, one or two stories. And, you know, you tell the person the story, and the person would say, wow, that's cool. That's amazing. You know, you ought to write a book. And so I heard this a number of times, and I thought, yeah, you know what? Maybe I should write a book. So, you know, that's what I've done. You know, in fact, I just finished it. Finished it last week. And now it's gone to the FBI for review. So wish me luck.
You expect any problems there?
You know, it's going to be a challenge because the work I did within the FBI especially was more about sources, methods, techniques. So it's going to, you know, as much as I can camouflage it and protect the identity and provide fictitious names throughout of people, right, to protect them, yeah, it's going to be a challenge. We'll see. I may be pleasantly surprised.
So the title, I believe, is Feds, from the Silence of the Lambs to the Castro Brothers. So perhaps you might give us one or two kind of anecdotes that kind of quick stories that kind of come to mind.
Well, with, you know, without putting, you know, throwing people under the bus. Well, there's one I thought that was kind of cute. I was working for the FBI in Newark, New Jersey, at the Newark field office in Newark. I remember that everybody in my squad was gone. Everybody was out. And this security officer from another squad, let's call him Gary. Gary came into the squad area and he sees me and he says, oh, thank God. I said, thank God what? Thank God you're here. I said, why? He goes, well, I've got a world famous author downstairs and he wants to have lunch with someone from the counterterrorism squad. And you're the only one here. And this is kind of funny. So I said, who are you talking about? He said, Tom Clancy.
Really?
Yeah. And I said, oh yeah, okay. I know, you know, I read one of his books, two of his books, seen a movie, Hunt for Red October, right? But believe it or not, I was so involved in my work that I said, I can't do it. I've got a commitment. So he went apoplectic. He was very upset. So he says, you know, geez, thanks a lot. You know, and off he goes, try to find somebody else. And it's really something in hindsight, I kind of kick myself for not making the time to do that. Because apparently he was looking for, a character, you know, he's wanted to have lunch with someone, an agent, and kind of talk to the agent and, kind of maybe get a FBI character. I thought, geez, I think I blew that one. That was one, I wish I had that one back. I think it would have been an interesting lunch. And who knows, maybe in one of his books, there would have been a Special Agent Strange in it. So,
very good.
Oh well, that's one of them, yeah.
So in your career, currently now as a private investigator, you're kind of specializing in missing persons cases, among other things. And I'd like to kind of maybe talk to you for a little bit about a case in Ireland. So our company, Follow the Camino, is based in Dublin. And you're quite involved in, a cold case here to do with a missing American student, Annie McCarrick.
Yes.
she was quite, it was quite a well-known kind of incident in the, I suppose, early 90s in Dublin. Perhaps first of all, you might give me a little bit of background on that case and why you were involved at that time.
Yeah, certainly, Sean. And it's, you know, as you know, it's a very sad, tragic case. You know, I lived in, not only I lived in New York City, we moved out to Long Island. I guess I was 15 when we moved to Long Island. Moved to a small town called Bayport. And so in going to Bayport High School, my teacher was Annie McCarrick's father, John McCarrick. Nancy, the mother, was also worked in our school. And then Annie became friends with, very good friends with my baby sister. So that was kind of the background to this. That's the relationship we had with her. So, you know, when she went missing, I believe it was 1993, we were all devastated for sure. So, it was terrible. I did get involved. I was in law enforcement and I did touch base with Mrs. McCarrick, Nancy. And, I said, have you taken this case to the FBI? And she said, no, we have not. And I said, well, you should at least, get it on paper. Maybe the FBI can help in some way, because they had been using private investigators over in Ireland. So I had a little bit of input into it, and I still follow the case closely, as you know. Even on the Camino, I ended up getting involved in a Skype interview with Irish RTE with Barry Cummins to talk about this very same case. So imagine, you're on the Camino, and this is I felt it was very important to do the interview, and our Spanish hosts were marvelous. They were able to provide a laptop and get me hook us up so we could do the interview. And then even more amazing was maybe a week or so later, we're still on the Camino and we run into an Irish fella named Jim from Belfast. And he says, hey, wait, we're chatting. And he said, wait a second, you're the FBI guy. I saw you last week on the telly. So, it's talk about small world.
Yeah. And it was in the newspapers earlier on this year that potentially there was a possible breakthrough in this cold case. And I believe you were actually intending to travel to Ireland with a couple of other kind of people, potentially with new information or a new theory on the disappearance.
Well, that's true. I mean, we were headed out there. It was a small team, which includes the private investigator from Dublin, who initially worked the case. He's got a lot of institutional knowledge. And then we had an attorney as well, who had also been a part of the case early on back in the 90s, myself. And so we were headed over there. We wanted to, first of all, we wanted to get in touch with the Gardaí and establish a relationship with the police to begin with. Which my colleague in Ireland has done recently and successfully. So that was good news for us. The cold case there was new life breathed into the case because I believe it was the person of interest in this whole matter had supposedly mentioned to another inmate, a fellow inmate, what he had done with another missing woman, which was part of that whole vanishing triangle. So that kind of breathed new life into the case. Unfortunately, I'm not privy to the details that the Irish police are, following up on. I heard that there could be a possible arrest, possibly. I don't know. So, I don't have any new leads. I wish I did. Yeah. There's been one interesting thing come up, which I would like to follow when I get back there. I can't really go into details with it, to protect, to protect the Irish citizen who had that information. But we're, you know, we're still working on that. And again, the whole thing is, for me, it's Nancy caught me a few years ago at church, maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And we chatted briefly, and she said, "Ken, I know she's gone. I just want to bring her home. What's left of her?" And that that hurts so much. It was so it was such sorrow in that. And I thought, you know what? We really have to find her daughter.
So, well, hopefully there can be some kind of conclusion in the near future.
God willing, I hope so.
Okay. So bring it back to the Camino then. What are the outstanding kind of memories that you have of your journey?
I think one of the things that was that caught our attention, and this goes back to this unexpected what's around the corner. We had run into a blind couple from Minnesota. Russell and Lori. Now, Russell was an attorney. Lori's a teacher. We kind of stumbled into them. We were so slow, and there was an introduction. We had an introduction. We were on the way to the village of Hontanas, somewhere out in that meseta. And Russell said, "Hey, welcome to the turtles." And I said, "Well, you know, we're the snails. Nice to meet you." And we ended up spending at least half a day with them, hiking the Camino. And I had never spent any time, real time, with blind people. And so it was very interesting to hear their, you know, they showed us, they had an app for the blind, and which was very interesting. They're outdoors people. They've raised a family. They go hiking a lot. This handicap didn't seem to really, it wasn't an impediment for them. They got over it. It was wonderful to be with them. And I think there was a moment in time, and this might have been the highlight for me of my trip, where he said to, we got to a little village, just before a little village, and it was the most beautiful village, the most beautiful stone bridge leading to the village, and the gurgling brook, the flowers, the breeze. And he turned to me and he said, "Ken, you know, what do you see?" And it was all of a sudden, it was like a lightning bolt hit me. I was stunned by the question, and I realized this is a profound moment for me. You know, have I taken my own sight for granted so many years? And so I thought, you know what? You describe the scene to him the best you can. You know, make it the way it is. Tell him. So that really struck me. That was probably the most significant. Well, and plus something which took place in the cathedral at the end, which was a very beautiful experience as well. So I'd say those two experiences were very profound, very moving.
Okay. And just before we wrap up, for people who maybe are considering the Camino for the first time, would you have any advice or tips for them?
Yes, for sure. And again, I'd go back to, if you're planning to do the Camino, I would say, please, you can do it. And to prepare is important in the sense that you want to find clothing or footwear that is going to help you get through it. For example, we purchased some good shoes, hiking shoes, some wool socks, and I didn't have one blister throughout the whole trip. My wife had maybe half a blister, if I could say that. But we ran into people that just didn't have the proper footwear. There was one girl that was traveling with sneakers, and you know, she was like, "Oh God, this hurts so much." And you know, some people were sidelined for like 1 or 2 days with bad feet because of that. So definitely the footwear is the most important part. And look, I wouldn't just walk onto the Camino without having, you know, maybe practiced a few weeks, maybe walking a mile or two, or you know, building up. I think the more you put into it, the more you'll get out of it.
Okay. And do you have any plans to do a Camino in the future when you're able to travel?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're going back. I'm not sure if we'll go back to the Camino Frances, but there are other Caminos I think there's a total of 10 or 12 or something. But, the Camino Inglés is one of them that, people have told us is a very pleasant, 60-mile hike. But there's also in the back of my mind, this challenge to do the Camino Norte, because it runs along the Basque coast, starts in Irun, France, and then goes along the Basque coastline and then down into Santiago. So I understand the scenery. It's not as well traveled and the accommodations are few and far between, right? But I understand the scenery is breathtaking. So
I think as you pass through the likes of San Sebastian and Bilbao, Santander, food is just amazing. So if you're a foodie.
I forgot about the food. Yes. Yeah. Seafood. Very good. Yeah. That's right.
Great. Well, listen, Ken, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. And I hope we'll chat again in the future.
Wonderful, Sean. Thanks for having me, and buen camino.
Buen camino.